Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 7, titled Plan and Execution.
And oh, what an execution.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't expecting it to be that literal.
I don't know that anybody was.
Wow. Was that the payoff you were looking for?
Payoff is an interesting word to choose. Well, it was something. It was definitely something. Poor Howie.
Yeah.
Wowie. Poor Howie.
For me, I thought it worked well. Was it worth three whole episodes set up? I don't know. We got a lot of comments about that in our feedback about whether or not, you know, it was actually worth it after all said and done. I mean, this episode was pretty amazing. It was extremely entertaining.
Yeah.
Even having called basically everything, like the audience knew what was going to happen essentially to Howard. I felt like, A, they had a slight wrinkle that we didn't see coming that we'll talk about. And then it was just so much fun to watch it play out. And I think it was even more fun the second time I watched it because I knew what was coming and I saw all the building blocks of it. And that's what I love. That's the pleasure I get out of like a really well-constructed story, is seeing how they put those pieces together. Seeing, almost getting like behind the scenes with the writers and going, okay, when they were writing this, they knew what would happen here. And they put this thing, this line or whatever in there because they were building to that. And they wanted it to be even more delicious when this character is fooled and made to look like an idiot. And I really enjoyed going back the second time and just dissecting all those little things and really had fun with that scene.
Yeah,
with Howard.
It was a lot of fun, and then it was not fun.
Yeah, and then there's the big twist that you kind of don't see coming, right?
Yeah, and just how brilliantly they shot that. Yeah. I love it's very dramatic. It's a little bit horror movie the way they do it. We'll get into it when we actually get to that last scene. But
oh yeah, that's another fantastically constructed scene.
Yes,
all that stuff is so good. And I, like I said, I think it mostly, you know, pays off. The 3 weeks before this that we were just kind of waiting. I do think they played a little bit too close to the vest with some of this stuff. I think the way they revealed sort of after the fact how they got the PI involved, I feel like was not typically how they tell their stories. I think normally I like when they are, if they would have had Jimmy make a call, or not even Jimmy make a call, but him like pay somebody to make a call to Howard's office at some point, and we didn't know what the call was necessarily about or why he was doing it, that would have made a little bit more sense than just like after the fact, oh yeah, I talked to my secretary and we got a call 3 weeks ago that said,
yeah, there was a little bit of an info dump there. There was still enough of the building blocks there, if you look back, that it still works for me, because I was having these moments where, like, Kim and Jimmy are hanging out in the lawn of on the lawn of HHM in the middle of the night or whatever, and like not being followed.
Yeah.
And I kept questioning. We kept questioning that stuff. Like, how did he not see the setup of all this?
Yeah.
And we even speculated, is he part of the team?
And
turns out he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, in retrospect, it does make sense. I think they just sort of retcon that a little bit, but like didn't give us all the information. I want them to be playing with their cards face up on the table, and me looking at those cards going, what do these cards mean? Like, how do I piece these together to make a really good hand? And in this case, which I think is not usually the case with Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad, they weren't playing with all their cards face up. So
I think that's a fair judgment. In their defense, I will say, I don't know if this is actually meant to be split up into two chunks the way it was. It just, the way that shooting was, they had to do it this way.
Yeah. Might be. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed this episode a lot. The most enjoyment I've gotten out of any episode this season. So.
Any episode. All right. The first episode was pretty good, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But man, it's hard to beat this one.
It's a good one. Just, again, even in just the way it's shot, it's very, very dramatic and poetic in some places. And the lighting is amazing. And they reused some interesting parts from previous episodes, which I'm looking forward to dropping when we get there.
Okay. I'm excited to hear.
If you've listened to the Insider Podcast, you already know all the things that I know.
But I did not have time. I was down here compiling feedback, and I was at the theater watching Top Gun, and I was watching multiple hours of Succession. Yeah, there's been a lot going on the last couple of days here.
Yeah. I was just driving around getting my hair cut, so I had time.
We got a ton of feedback, so we probably ought to get to the recap so that we can eventually get to the feedback.
All right, sounds good. Let's do it.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So speaking of cutting straight to things, this week we cut straight to the wheat, no chaff. It's nighttime, and we learn that Lalo's been camping out in a storm drain across the street from the super lab. A la It. Big It vibes.
Yes, very much so. Your description really just like shuffles under the rug the fact that this scene takes a while.
It
takes its sweet time. And I'm not complaining, actually, in this one. I think like seeing the lengths that he's willing to go to.
Yes.
Because he knows, right? He knows who Gus is. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't do this, he's going to get caught immediately.
Right. And then I love that he still ends up botching it. Bless him. Because it can't help himself. Yeah, that phone call he makes later that he shouldn't have made.
He gets very close to it. I think he catches himself. He almost messes up.
Mm.
But then, yeah, he realizes what's going on. But we'll talk about that here in a second.
Yeah.
A lot of indignities suffered by Lalo in this episode. First of all, the indignity of making the sewer your office.
Yeah.
That's pretty...
That's a hard one.
Indignatious, is that a word? That can't be a word.
It is now. It is now.
That's pretty indignatious.
4 days. 4 days of indignatiousness. Yeah.
Indignation. Can't be what that means. And the indignity of putting on flip-flops on screen, on camera. I mean, it's just... There's no good way to put on tight, well-fitting flip-flops, right? You have to, like... Stick your foot halfway in and then shuffle your toes.
Yeah, you kind of like have to do that. You got to do the toe scrunch to get it, to really get it on there.
Indignatious as hell. And then the indignity of the truck stop shower.
Although it was a pretty nice one. I feel like it's one of the nicer ones I've seen.
It wasn't like, bad. Ever. I was surprised. I like how they have the 1 hour limit sign on there. Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
I did, yeah.
Are one truck hour, stop showers people. Just like... Yeah, 1 hour, two people. Our truck stop shower is just like sleazy motels where like you pay by the hour and whatever happens in that shower, that's your business.
I mean, you got to stay awake somehow, right?
Right? That's what I assume is that's what's going on there.
Difficult to say. I didn't see
personal activities.
They didn't show the condom dispenser on the wall, but I'm sure there was one. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of 1 hour, he allows himself 1 hour of sleep and then continues staking out the laundry.
Yeah, he's dedicated.
Oh, he might have been sleeping in that shower, too. I'm not sure. He's leaned up against the wall. He's not moving.
Oh, sure.
He might have just been asleep on his feet.
I think he's just enjoying being scoured by the hot water right before he goes right back in the dookie hole.
Yeah.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see it.
That travel center looks so much like a UDF. It kind of flipped my bean for a second.
I feel like all modern... convenience stores look like this now.
That's
fair. They've moved to a classier look.
The fake wood paneling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like it.
He did the predictable thing. We kind of thought, okay, maybe he goes straight for the laundry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing. But then when he realizes that he can't really just make a straight run at Gus, he has to figure out a way around. And I thought it was... smart, both about how he approached the laundry and then also going for Kim and Jimmy when he realizes he can't get directly to Gus.
It's interesting. It almost seems like when he in the later scene, because we're going to see him down in the sewer a couple times.
Yeah.
But in a later scene when he sees Mike coming out with all the other cockroaches whenever he lights a fire under their butts, it's kind of like that's when he makes the connection.
Yeah, I love it. He sees that roach and then he's like,
yes.
Oh, right, Jimmy's out there. That roach.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Got anything else to say about that one?
No.
Okay, next we are with Jimmy running around collecting his crew and executing the broken arm reshoot. This is a fun scene.
Yeah, he's got to assemble his team like a heist movie.
Yep. Pulling them from various locales.
Mm-hmm. You got Larry. I think his name's Larry. It was hard to see the name tag.
Lenny, I think.
Lenny? Okay.
Or something like that.
He's practicing his lines while pushing carts for some production. I tried to look up what he's saying.
It doesn't match anything. This must be fictional
because searching those lines doesn't reveal anything. It's not like, oh, he's doing Shakespeare in the Park or something.
Nice.
It's just, as best I can tell, it's not anything real.
I appreciate the investigation.
But I could be wrong about that. If I am, you can probably find out on Reddit because they do crowdsourced research, which is much better than mine.
I like how to get this first guy back on the team, he literally crawls across his front seats through the passenger side window and just like lays platitudes upon him like this acting thing and this acting thing and this acting thing. The show must go on, right?
Yeah.
Carpe diem.
Appeals to
Wonderful.
His actor's spirit.
Put in a very like Jimmy, come on, let's go kind of way.
Yeah.
It's good.
At this point, like he's a director, right? I mean, he's directed commercials over and over again. He's got a crew that he works with regularly. Like he is a film director.
He is,
or at least
yeah.
an advertising director.
Yep.
So yeah, this is just him doing his job, getting his actors motivated. What's my motivation? $400 and the spirit of acting.
Yes, and then $500 and That's oh, it. That's God. All he needs for the that kid, the camera guy.
This is his biggest scene to date, right? Like the
sure.
most,
yeah.
The most, he the most to lines do. He's had. Yeah. The probably the longest screen time, unbroken.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy is a teacher's assistant.
Ugh.
Ugh. Yeah, he's the worst.
Power trip. Yeah.
It's
always the worst. He's the worst kind of TA. The worst yeah. kind. It's like Griffin McElroy with none of the charisma. I didn't realize how awful that would be until I was presented it mm-hmm. in front of my face.
Yeah. I love that. This isn't even like a VHS camcorder, right? This is a Betamax camcorder, which a lot of people are going to write in and say, oh, Betamax is actually technically superior. I know. But come on. Nobody used Betamax except at schools, except in newsrooms.
Right.
The people were shooting on VHS.
Yes. The format of the people is VHS.
And then he finally gets everybody together in the park. Kim shows up with supplies for the cast.
So it's kind of she ends up being the director in this scene.
Yeah, she does. Gets her toe into the directing pool. I imagine this is probably what Vince Gilligan looks like running around on set.
No, he's just kicking off his shoes.
Over the shoulder. Yeah, I'm not going to try and do a Vince Gilligan impersonation. That's their impression.
Yeah, you can't. I don't know if there is a good way to mimic that accent without making it sound like you're defaming somebody.
Yeah, I'll let the man's accent alone. But yes, I can just picture him running around trying to get shots looking just like this.
That would be fun. Speaking of shots, this continuous shot that they have in the scene, it's really beautiful and delightfully chaotic.
Yeah.
It really kind of got my heart pumping a little bit. Like, I felt like I was in a rush to do something really, really quick.
Yeah, Tom Schnauz directed this one. They don't do a lot of these types of shots. Like, this is typical, like, heist-style shooting, which is kind of why I referred to it as, like, assembling your crew for a heist, because
absolutely.
This shot feels like, I don't know, something
like
out of Ocean's
It's like going around the table
while they're
discussing their different parts of the plan, right? And you see each of their faces, like, you're panning across. Very much that feeling. But also with taping diapers to a man's arm.
right. Yeah,
delightful,
it's like a
use
Reservoir
of,
Dogs or something.
Yeah.
It's good. I liked it.
It's gritty. Yes. And at the end of the scene, that is where we finally see that we were right, sort of, in one of our speculations that this PI was working for them the whole time.
Yeah.
They put the photos directly into his hands after doctoring them, of course.
Yeah. Completely unambiguous at this point.
How long does it take that solution to dry on the photos? Because they were grabbing those photos off the line and jamming them right in the envelope. I'm like,
yeah,
is that?
And literally out of his hand, too.
Yeah,
like
out of the
bath. He
just
pulled it out of the solution and
right.
then grab it.
So how does that work? I don't know. That's probably a a dumb thing to get hung up on, considering everything else. But yeah, it seems wet photos. Seems hard.
Apparently you can still rush the process. I don't want to hear it.
Right. Next, we cut to Howard hanging out in the meeting room before the big show. This is
the soda drop scene.
This is the soda drop scene. This is also the scene where Howard's like, hey, it's hot. Is anybody hot? It's just me.
Yeah.
Does that soda trick work?
I don't know. I tried to look it up and I couldn't tell. Based on internet searches. What are you doing?
I'm just shaking a can of soda, man. I'm just shaking a can of soda.
Oh, my God.
I have a
you
bowl.
You better spin that thing like a top.
I have a bowl.
You better spin it from now till Hanukkah like a dreidel.
Howie Ham only spun it like three times.
No, not Chuck, though. Chuck spun it a lot. Chuck would do it. Jesus
Your
Christ.
Face. I'll be damned.
What?
Oh, it works.
What?
Sip.
All right. Well, I got to cut.
This is the greatest day of my life.
I have to cut somebody's email now because they were saying that someone in the Bald Move fandom should check that. Apparently, My wife's just going to check it live here over the carpet.
I am the Bald Mave fandom. I had a bowl.
Grape soda, highly staining grape soda.
He's lying to you. It is key lime LaCroix. Get off my nuts, man.
Ooh, it's grape LaCroix with a dye in it.
Anyway, so that works.
Wow.
Apparently. Wow. My mind has just been blown.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just going to do that from now on.
Get yourself a new party trick.
I do. Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Now you can be like Marco and you can bet people. You should shake up a soda and be like, I bet I can open that without spilling a drop.
Perfect. Perfect.
And they'll bet you $20.
I will remember this.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So this is a good scene for a lot of reasons. It starts off with the kid dropping the soda, right? The new guy dropping the soda. And Howard's talking about how he learned this trick of spinning the thing from Chuck. And points to a picture of Chuck up on the wall. And I feel like this is interesting because, like, this person doesn't remember who Chuck was. Chuck's gone.
Yeah.
And this show is kind of reminding us by bringing this back to Chuck how he already drove one of these partners to his death.
And Jimmy did. Yeah.
Previously. And by the end of this episode, he's going to have done it again with Howard.
Yeah, literally with the other one.
And they're both unintentional, but arguably his fault, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can draw. Like, the line is, it's got a lot of crests and troughs, but it's a straight line.
Yeah,
without it is a direct line
input
to
on either of
deaths.
These.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't, neither of them end up dead, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty sad seeing Chuck up there on the wall.
And reminding us of the consequences of Kim and Jimmy messing around again. Mostly Jimmy.
Also, Howard, you know, his journey, being reminded of his journey and how much he's been through, through the death of Chuck and, you know, questioning whether Chuck's sort of maniacal drive to be the best lawyer and be spoken of in such fond terms was worth it.
I do. I like his face as we leave this room of this scene where he's like, maybe that's not the most important thing, to be the best at anything.
Yeah.
Because, boy, look at where it can lead you. It can really drive you crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
If this is important or not, but as he walks out of the room to talk with Irene and Cliff, the side of the room that they are sitting in is just like so warm and inviting, and the colors that they are wearing are very neutral, just like it's warm, right? It's just warm and cozy. And then literally on the other side of this very small room where the windows are, you have Howard and his paralegal or his assistant. And it's just, it's the cold, harsh daylight, right? And somehow these two bits are just right next to each other in this scene.
And they're dressed, you know, in blues
of course.
Like cool colors. And I think Cliff almost always wears a brown suit, right?
He does. Yeah. He's very
tans and browns, and
he's very like, and his office is like that too.
Yeah.
I don't know what's a good word to describe that, but yes.
Warm earth tones, that kind
earth
of stuff.
Tones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a big contrast between the two of them.
There is.
Patrick Fabian, man, I gotta give it up to him. This is his episode, right?
Oh, like, absolutely.
It's his time to shine. I feel like we've gotten good Howard stuff before, but this is probably the best work he's done and the most work he's done.
Yeah, it's the most anything. It's the most sympathetic. It's the most, his like mini tirade at the end is totally deserved. Like, you cannot spot the lie in anything that he's saying.
That's the thing. He's exactly right about all this.
Yeah.
And the tragedy of it is he can't do anything about it.
He can't.
It's
very affecting.
Yeah. And he's just so good. He's so good at being angry about it and you know, righteously angered by the whole situation. Like, I've caught you in your lies and I'm going to take you down and prove that I'm right here.
Right.
There's a little bit of like Chuck-esque stuff going on there, but then he's also very funny, like very funny.
Yes.
Like the stuff where he's like, is anybody else hot? There's just a couple of lines in there where I see them, you know, constructing this.
Yeah.
And it's just so good. And And the line that really gets me is when once, you know, they all get into the room with the mediator and Howard says, "Hey, I saw you. I got these photos. Go get these photos off my desk." And he's saying, "Look, I know this all sounds a bit baroque, but when you see the photos, it'll be clear." And now, like, the second time I watch this, which is even more delicious to me, is the first time through, I didn't know that the photos were going to be switched. I thought he'd just get the photos and the judge would be like, "That's not me." And he'd still look crazy, but he'd have the photos. But the fact that he doesn't even have the photos he thinks he has some weirdo,
Ultimate
Frisbee player with a mustache.
Yeah, really makes him look like he's off his rocker. It was so good. Brilliant. I was not expecting that second. The second level to that switcheroo.
Yeah.
It was really delightful.
Yeah. They tend to do that stuff too. I should have been expecting it. I should have seen it coming because Jimmy doesn't want to leave evidence either, right?
Of course.
And so the idea that, like, they photograph someone who looks identical to the judge would be really suspicious.
I mean, yeah, that would be, it would be pretty obvious that that was what he was going for.
Yeah.
But adding that second level of remove to it. It's not just the tennis player, but it's also the tennis player with that same crazy mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Is this supposed to be me?
That's very good. Yeah. Patrick Fabian's doing some amazing, like, just facial acting in this episode. I feel like maybe he didn't really get to do a lot of that so much before because his character was a lot more one note. But in this, even just in this season, we've seen him have to deal with so many other things and so many different emotions.
I especially love, I mean, there's so many good parts, but the one of the other parts I like is when the judge walks in, the ex-judge, whatever, retired judge, walks in, Howard sees him, and the rest of the scene until he, like, speaks up, he's just staring daggers at this guy.
Yeah, he's fuming. He's literally fuming.
I think
you can see his jaw is like jutted forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is this the guy I saw? Am I certain of that? How certain am I? Because if I'm not 100% on this, I shouldn't say anything. And you can see the gears turning and you can see him go, "No, yes, this is the guy." And just getting angrier and angrier when he, you know, talks about compromise and sets him off. It's so good.
It was good. Kim and Jimmy call in at some point and they start listening.
Yeah.
And we cut back to them for reaction shots throughout this debacle, this thing that falls apart. And they're kind of acting like kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a little immature. Jimmy's doing the fishing line thing.
Yeah.
And they're banging it out at the end when it goes their way.
They're happy. The plan went off. Now they're going to go off.
Yeah, it just but it really highlights just how shitty their actions are.
Oh yeah.
At the end.
To Howard's credit, he figures this out remarkably quick. Like, he is just on top of it. As soon as he realizes, oh, these are the wrong pictures, he's off to figure out what happened.
Yep.
He goes to his secretary, finds out the number was switched.
Mm-hmm.
He calls every single detail of this.
Yeah,
knows
he's
exactly
smart.
What's happening.
He's a lawyer for a reason, for sure.
But how do you recover from this? You can't.
Yeah.
I mean, Cliff's not going to believe you. Of course
not. I guess his plan was to just namaste his way through it.
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we'll talk about this a little bit more in that final scene. But yeah, Howard is a guy who apparently, I mean, though we don't get to see a lot of this, has been down before.
Mm-hmm.
Not just with the Chuck stuff and after his death, but before that even.
Right.
Talks about, you know, debt problems and all kinds of stuff later on. I don't know. We don't get to see any of that. I kind of wish we did. I almost wish this episode had started with a flashback for Howard, given us a little bit more.
Yeah, that might have been some good context.
But it's okay.
Yeah, we still got a lot. What else is good about this? I had it kind of separated into two chunks in my notes here. This whole meeting. What else is good?
I guess after, you know, the meeting deteriorates, Schweikert tells Cliff, "Look, we're going back on the deal here. we're going to the original deal, and if you don't take it, we're reducing it by $1 million each day until
it's brutal.
Brutal. So that puts the ticking clock on Cliff, which I think is smart, right?
Definitely. Forces his hand. So,
yeah, Cliff realizes, this is never going to get better.
The damage has been done at this point. Even if he did believe, and he says this, even if your story was true, it doesn't matter. The damage is done. This deal is rotten now, and we just have to take whatever scraps they're willing to give us, which is still a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's a big settlement.
Probably not a lot. Not as much as their offer was.
Yeah, for sure. I do wish more of these cases would go to trial. I wish a lot more cases would go to trial, especially strong ones like this, where there's a lot of evidence in favor of the people here who've been hurt by these corporations. Because, man, I don't know. I feel like people need to be held responsible more often than they are. And in a settlement, you don't have to admit any wrongdoing.
It's a payoff.
It's literally like, we will pay this amount of money to make this problem go away.
It's a fine for wrongdoing.
Yeah.
Basically, instead of having any actual consequences.
And in this case, I think that the fine is greater than the amount of money that they made off of this scam. But you never know. And also, I mean, sometimes you know. But in this case, I don't think we actually know.
No.
And then, you know, the people who do this thing don't learn their lesson because they didn't get their knuckles wrapped. They just...
Yeah.
They just had to say sorry.
Basically.
With money.
Yeah. They have to keep their nose clean for like the rest of the year, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does. It feels wrong. It doesn't feel like justice. I'm with you on that one. Poor Cliff. Getting left holding the bag whenever Howard's just like, and he storms out. Basically, Cliff's like, oh, okay. And he just has to take the full brunt of Schweikert's disdain.
Yeah.
Which is... That's just unfortunate.
I like Erin in this scene too. She's kind of bogarting the conference call mic for a while. Like
she's
speaking in right into it, and I can't tell if that's because she knows that everybody on this line is probably going to be old and maybe a little hard of hearing, or if she's just like a control freak and wanted this, because she is that. I mean, she's about as anal as they come. So I didn't know. I thought it was a nice touch, though, that she's got the microphone like right in front of
her. That's very her. Yeah, it's very true to her character.
It
is probably both. Let's be real. Next, we cut to Lalo in his hideout, where he's making a video for Donald Audio. He calls Hector's care facility and immediately realizes he messed up.
Yeah, apparently the line is bugged.
Here's a weird click, and that's all he needs to hear.
He realizes it. But I like his solution here, right? He's a smart guy. He realizes he can use this to his advantage.
Yeah, he immediately pivots it.
He can find out, you know, how many guys Gus has, what his security is like there. He can use it to gather intelligence.
That's the thing that's been so rough with Lalo, is that he's a little bit crazy. Like, obviously, a little bit of a sociopath, but he's also smart.
Yeah. He plays a little loose, too.
Yeah.
He's like... I'm surprised he doesn't get caught more often because he's sloppy, right?
He'll just burn
a place to the ground, leave
tracks
out everywhere.
Of the way. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess he's smart and slippery enough to get away each time.
It's like Jimmy. He knows where he can slip.
Yeah.
And where he needs to keep his nose clean.
Mm-hmm.
What a boogeyman.
And then this is the scene where he sees the roach at the end, right? Like he calls up Hector and says some things that Hector doesn't like. Hector is very much against the idea of hitting Gus's laundry tonight.
Yeah.
You have any idea why that is? Does he think that if he does that, Eladio will come down on him?
I think that might be the case.
He's the earner.
Yeah, and he's also by himself.
Yeah.
Lalo is all on his lonesome.
He might be worried about him.
Yeah. I mean, that is one thing you can say about the Salamancas, is that they do care about their own family, at least.
Yeah.
And he is... I would say Hector's favorite nephew.
Yeah, seems like it. I do wonder if, you know, he tips his hand here that he's alive, right? He gives actual proof to Gus that he is, in fact, alive,
right.
Whereas Gus always just kind of suspected it. And Mike was, like, going along with Gus because Gus is his boss, but Mike wasn't totally sure about it. I do wonder if he could have just sort of waited them out, like, lulled them into, like, you know, go 4 months down the line, still no Lalo.
Yeah.
Are we really going to, are you really going to stay in this safe house?
Are you going to keep paying all these people?
Yeah. Right. These people.
Your bottom line, man. Don't want
to
be
doing
line.
This. You need to get back to building your super lab. Like, could Lalo just have waited him out and not tipped his hand that he's alive here?
I think he probably could have, but also who wants to wait that long?
Sure.
In
Especially
a storm drain.
In the sewer.
Yeah. Nobody. Nobody. But as soon as he makes that call, that second call, he gets the bugs buzzing. Everybody is going to battle stations, basically.
Yeah.
And part of that is mostly leaving the laundromat empty of people, which, silly me, I thought, oh, good for you. Now you can just go in there and do what you need to do, collect proof. But no, of course not.
I think Mike says later that Tyrus is in there now with his guys.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm, I guess, wondering what the next actual step is. Does he?
I'm wondering that too. What useful information could he actually get from Jimmy? That was my first thought when I realized that first candle puff, the way they showed it, I was like, okay, so Lalo is definitely going to show up here again. Why?
Yeah. Especially, yeah, we'll talk about it more.
Yeah,
when we get to that
scene. I know.
But
I just,
especially
like,
because they cut from the concern now, the going concern from the end of that last Howard scene to the end of the episode is really the Lalo and Gus and Mike stuff.
Yeah.
And they go directly from that to the candle thing. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is Lalo showing back up. But we know how that goes.
Oh yes. Yes, we do.
So my guess here is that Mike is the thing that connects the dots for him.
Like, it has to be. Yeah.
He sees Mike there coming out of the laundry. And then he sees the roach, remembers Jimmy, and he's going back to Jimmy. I'm trying to remember how this might connect back to Mike and back to Gus.
Mm-hmm. What evidence would Lalo have that would have even connected Mike and Jimmy, other than he knows that Jimmy got out of the desert?
Exactly. I think that's it.
And he's thinking it's highly unlikely that he did it himself.
Yeah.
And he also found his car full of bullet holes.
Uh-huh. So he knows something is fishy about that. I think he's going back there and he's going to make Jimmy talk.
He's going to sweat him for the story again.
Yeah.
Dear God. I guess he's going to tell it true this time, though, because he's got a fucking body on the floor.
Oh, yeah. He's serious.
Rough.
And I did think, okay, it's good now that maybe Mike has people on Kaylee's house.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out he pulled those people?
He pulled everybody off of the non-essential places.
The low-priority stuff,
which was apparently Kim and Jimmy's condo. And
And probably Kaylee. I feel like Kaylee, it's high priority for him, but it's very low priority and likelihood for Gus. So
for sure, yeah.
I wonder if there are still people at Mike's granddaughter's house.
I don't know. It's a good question. There are a lot of people moving around.
Mm-hmm.
But right after we're with Lalo, we are taken to Gus in yet another charity photo shoot at a school gym of all places. It looks like it used to be a hangar. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of basketball. I hesitate to call it a stadium. Gyms are like this, and especially in like rural areas. They're these weird.
I feel like mine are always just big boxes.
Barn-shaped things. Oh, yeah.
Tall boxes, yeah. Mm. Like 20-foot tall ceilings, 30-foot.
Yeah.
Big, tall. So while he's there, Mike comes in and gives him the bad news, tells him he better get the hell out. Mm-hmm. There's kids around, man. There's kids. We don't want to see children getting shot. Sorry. Having a moment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shoot. I forgot to mention. So, the sewer storm drain thing that Lalo's hiding out in does not exist in Albuquerque. They don't have those, especially not big like that. So what these mad lads did was they recycled the tanker truck from Nacho's episode.
I thought it looked like that might have been the case.
Yeah, they did that and they built around it.
Okay.
Amazing.
Makes a lot of sense.
I love it.
Do they not have them there because it doesn't rain enough?
Yeah. Ooh, it's a desert. Yeah. That's a good, probably, right?
Because here we need those.
Yo, we desperately need those, yeah.
Hadn't thought about it.
But yeah, I thought that was good. And it wasn't even a deliberate choice so much as they were scrambling at that point. It was one of those situations while they were shooting this where it was like, if one person in the team got COVID, then the episodes were not going to air when they needed to.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're really like trying to pull shit together.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's incredible. TV sounds hard.
Oh, yeah. The timelines we're working with are very tight.
Yeah, it's rough. But that's all. That's all I had to say about that. All right. Are we ready to... Oh, let's talk about this final scene.
Okay.
All right. We cut to, finally, Kim and Jimmy watching a movie when Howard interrupts with a victory scotch and a lot of justifiably angry questions. He calls them sociopaths. And then the biggest sociopath arrives.
Yeah. What allows you to do this to me?
Nothing.
That's a damn good question,
Their
Howard.
Their ballsiness. That's it.
And I think he's right. I think he's right about all this. You know, he's been right about the plan.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's right about the characterization of them, where they get off on it.
In this scene, in the conclusion of this part, I'm sure the scene's going to continue in the next part of the season, but the end of the scene is them getting punished again for messing around with people's lives for their own benefit.
Yeah.
And they deserve it.
Well, I think so. A couple of references here that might shed a little bit of light on this scene or maybe the future of Kim and Jimmy.
Lay it on me.
This movie that they're watching at the very beginning is called Born Yesterday. It's from 1950. Don't believe everything you read on Reddit, because they got the description of this completely wrong. It was clear that the person who wrote it had not seen the movie. I went to IMDb, I looked up the synopsis of the film, and this is a movie about a woman who considers herself dumb or has never like challenged herself, and kind of gets walked all over by all over for it by the people in her life. And over the course of the film, she gets with a reporter who's like her life tutor. I don't know. And he takes her to museums and teaches her a whole bunch of stuff. And it turns out she's not dumb. She just had never really done anything.
Unexposed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and through the course
before me
of doing all that and experiencing new things, she eventually wisens up to the fact that her, I don't know if it's boyfriend, husband, whatever, has been just the worst. He's like a drug dealer or whatever too. And she eventually grows beyond him. And I thought that was, could be pretty telling with what we know of Kim and Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy is the con man, right? The criminal. He can be likened to that guy who is kind of just walking all over her doing things. It gets a little muddy because Kim has been more in the driver's seat lately, but there's a lot of possibility here with, like you were talking about, with the events going on here, like how is Kim going to react to this?
That's my other question.
It's it's a big event.
It's huge.
And we have some pretty good emails on this too, so I don't want to step all over it, but definitely like I'm thinking about Kim, I'm thinking about Jimmy, and like, the things that Howard's saying, like you chose this, like you did it because you're just excited by it.
You get off on this.
Yeah, yeah. You're not. I don't know. And he calls them Leopold and Loeb.
Yeah.
Which is another reference to some criminals who were like college professors at like Chicago University, pretty prestigious university. And they decided, hey, we're going to commit the perfect crime. So they abducted and murdered a 14-year-old girl just to try and get away with a crime.
Wow.
For no real reason whatsoever. Because they thought they were smarter than everybody.
cool.
Turns out they got their asses busted. They both went to prison for, they got life plus 99 years.
Nice.
Both went to prison. One of them died in prison. The other one paroled out somehow. I have no idea how you parole out from a life plus 99 years sentence.
Right.
But they did. So these dumbasses thought they could get away with the perfect crime. That's what he's saying to them. It's like, you people think you're so smart that you can fool everybody.
And that everybody
here we are. You didn't fool me.
Yeah.
Right. I know exactly what you're up to.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful final scene for him.
Yeah. And I love, too, that reference. It's so specific to a lawyer, right? That would have been a big case, catching the people who think they're committing the perfect crime.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's just like Howard to know about it. Just like him.
Yeah.
Let's talk about these. That candle. Man, that candle.
Yes.
That was a beautiful. I basically already did talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. The watching it wave the first time when Howard opens the door and then just cutting to it waving the second time.
Yep.
It was so horror movie. It was so reinforcing this idea that I and other people have had this whole time of Lalo being this ghost that's haunting everybody.
Yeah.
It's spectral and poignant and dramatic. I love it.
And they lull you a couple of times in this episode. They lull you into this false sense of like, oh, I now know what's going to happen in this scene, right? Like, oh, this isn't the big Lalo scene that I thought it was when you see the candle waver the first time, the flame wiggle. and then Howard walks in. You're like, oh, no, this is a Howard scene.
This is a confrontation.
And then everything changes with that second wiggle, right? All they have to do is show you that wiggle and you're like,
and you know,
oh, no,
right?
This is the scene I thought it was.
Yeah. So rough.
And it's the switcheroo twice. It's like, because the first time, like I said, you're coming off of the Lalo, Gus, Mike stuff, and you're thinking, okay, this is the natural lead-in to the confrontation with Lalo.
Right.
And he's going to show up at the door, and then he doesn't. It's Howard. And the second time they switcheroo, it is Lalo.
It's Lalo. It's both. It's both.
Yeah, it's crazy
somehow.
Good. I love this scene.
And just watching these two worlds that could not be more different colliding is amazing. Howard thinking that he's going to be able to back his way out of this because it's people, right? You could always talk your way out of people. You can smile real big and get yourself out of a situation, and that's
and
just not how it works.
He's there for like the most important thing in his life. He's like on a mission right now.
Yep.
What he doesn't realize is there is something much bigger and much scarier than he is right now.
So much bigger, yeah.
And then when he finally, when Lalo walks in and he's like, I recommend getting different lawyers, you know, it's like, he doesn't realize what's going on here at all.
He has no idea. And there's no way that he could know.
The look on Jimmy and Kim's face should tell him everything he needs to know. Like, Howard leave. He probably thinks it's part of the ruse, right? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I almost wish they had him turn to Lalo and be like, oh, are you in on it too? What are you going to do to me, huh? Are you going to dye my hair blue? What next, Jimmy? What next? And then gun to the head. But like,
yeah, that would have been more Chuck than Howard.
Yeah, I think you're right. But man, even just as constructed, it's such a good scene.
It is. And I got to say, Kim and Jimmy like immediately screaming when he gets shot in the head. That was me too. That was me. That was me and you on the couch. Like, even though we knew, and that's part of what makes it so great, is because at that point, you know what's coming.
Yeah.
He's screwing the silencer onto his gun. Someone's getting shot. Howard is a witness at this point.
Yeah. It's just unceremonious.
It's very unceremonious.
Like, matter of fact, I'm just going to kill this guy.
And then he goes straight back to Lalo right after. He was like, okay, let's talk.
Yeah.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Psychopath.
Chilling. But I still hit it. I'm sorry.
Do you think this changes the Sandpiper case at all? Is this like...
I don't know if they've already signed the papers.
Lead lawyer shows up dead in Jimmy's apartment. Is he going to be found? Is there going to be a body?
That's my next question. Dealing with that fallout is going to be really interesting to see how they handle that the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Dear God. And how about Kim? How is this going to weigh on her conscience? One, that they did this to Howard. Two, she knew Lala was still alive, and she didn't tell another fucking soul. Yeah. So how... Ooh, how do you like those apples, Kim?
I love it, because when Lala walks in, Jimmy looks at him. He's horrified. He's, and he says, how?
Yeah.
And then Kim, right beside him, says, Howard, you need to leave. There's like this Howard H.O. Ward combination that they've got going here that I just felt was like pretty clever.
It was a really beautifully constructed scene, especially with it being a scene that we've sort of a little bit already seen before, but
kind of,
but just in a completely different context. It's even scarier than the first time it happened, because now he's pissed. Now he doesn't really have that much to lose.
And we know, you know, he's here for a reason, and we know what that reason is. It's
and he's not going to leave without an answer. The first time
he wasn't satisfied.
Exactly. And he's probably kicking himself for just leaving the first time.
Right.
But yeah, Howie, he gets shot in the head, he falls, he bounces. So sad.
Yeah.
And that is the end. It's the end of the episode.
Yep, got more to say about that scene, but we've got some emails that might take care of that.
All right, let's do it.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, as you can probably imagine, we got a ton of feedback on this episode, and I had to cut a bunch of it. Sorry. I basically cut almost everything that came in between last week's podcast and the episode airing, because we have so much to talk about here with this episode.
A lot of those questions are answered. No.
And a lot of those questions were answered, yeah. So there was one question that I gave to the audience that they had to answer, and we'll just take care of it real quick. Jen, Joe, and Andrew got the answer right. Jim likes Revenge of the Sith, which is the only one I haven't seen, says Jen. Gave up after the second. Haven't seen the best.
Is that one, two, or three? This is the third
one? It's three, yeah.
Okay. I thought that might be the one, just because that's the only one where things that you would care about happen.
Yeah.
Job, you guys.
Yeah, you got it. Tom from Atlanta says, hold your horses there. I can't believe I forgot to send this. Remember 2 years ago when I jokingly predicted someone was going to lose a foot because of all the feet stuff during season 5? You even read it on the podcast. Well, I was right. I was just 2 years ahead. Either that or Gould listens to your podcast and was inspired by my brilliant insight. Either way, I'll be taking my internet points, please. Thanks, as always, for reading the deep stuff as well as the stupid stuff.
You get 17 internet points for that. Congratulations.
Yeah, he did also include the original email. He says, I've included the original email below as proof nobody tries to gaslight my ass. Unfortunately, the original email only mentions hands. There are no feet anywhere in that email. So I don't know if you can get the points, Tom.
That's iffy.
Only Tom is going to understand what I'm doing here. All right. We got one more before we get to this week's episode. Alan says, I'm with you guys on the broken arm. I don't know why they didn't just have someone see him in the courthouse parking lot instead of the liquor store. Here's the thing. Now that we've seen this episode, I think I understand. I think this is a timing thing. And I think timing applies to a lot of this season. The reason we kept getting setup episodes is because we needed to understand that a lot of time was passing, right?
Right.
That call that they made to Howard's secretary to change the number was 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to say how much time has passed exactly in this plan leading up to D-Day, but it's clearly been, like Howard said, weeks, months, you know, how long has it been? And with Lalo running around in Germany and needing time to get from Mexico to Germany and Germany to the US. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of timing issues that I think they were working with here. And so they kind of slow rolled that plot a little bit, but it doesn't feel like it when you're watching it, I think. What I think they were doing is trying to make it feel like time was passing.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were really building something. And I think it more or less worked to accomplish that. Whether it was exciting is another question altogether. But yeah, I think that's it. Like the piece that, you know, speaks to the judge here and seeing them in the liquor store is you needed enough time between the judge leaving the liquor store and Jimmy seeing him to him getting into this meeting for them to reshoot that, right?
Yeah.
Those photos. Because if he saw him in the courthouse parking lot, there's not enough time. The guy's going into the meeting. It's it's done.
It's not at the courthouse. It's at HHM.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Or if he saw him at Omaha Beach, not sure. Enough time, right?
Right.
So I think it was a matter of timing. Like, let's see him outside of the areas that the Jimmy would be likely to run into him at.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it doesn't make a lot of sense that he would run into him there.
Yeah, it's reasonable, though. I agree with you, especially it being a liquor store. I don't think it's out of the question for adult professionals to gift booze to each other.
Yeah, I assume it's pretty normal near the courthouse or near HHM or something.
Yeah, it must be.
All right, let's get on to this week's episode. First off, we have Judah writing in saying, after the way the season has gone up until this most recent episode, I know I was left wondering what would be the final moment or series of moments that would send Jimmy fully on his way to becoming Saul Goodman we see in Breaking Bad. After the way this episode ended, I was left wondering if this is that final moment many of us have been waiting for, or if there's more to come. I'm curious if you think that the death of Howard and the aftermath of that will inevitably cause him to go full Saul Goodman, or do you think there's a couple other crucial moments we've yet to see? And I think when people say full Saul Goodman, they mean the amoral guy, you know, who's willing to kill Badger or whatever.
Right. The one who doesn't have a heart anymore, basically. Yeah. When does he lose his heart?
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a little more to go still. Just my personal, mostly just because we have so many episodes left.
Yeah.
But I do think that the downward trend is definitely started.
I think there's a pretty defining moment ahead of us, especially when you speak to Jimmy's heart, that is going to change it. And I think both the second half of this email and Alex C. next up from New York kind of have this right. So Judah continues, secondly, as we the audience know, Jimmy will eventually fully delve into the life of crime, but Kim's future is very much up in the air. Do you think the death of Howard will push Kim further into a life of crime or have her scrambling to get out of it? And Alex C. from NYC thinks it will pull Kim out. He says, this is where Jimmy and Kim divide. Recall how they deal with trauma and grief, such as Chuck's death. Kim wanted to confront it head on, deal with it, be affected by it. Jimmy puts it in a box and ignores it. Jimmy's going to deal with this by going full Saul and never thinking about this or talking about it. For Kim, it'll be a bridge too far and drive them apart. I wouldn't be surprised to see her move somewhere new for a totally fresh start. And that's where Jimmy loses his heart, right?
Yeah.
When he loses Kim. I think that's really what it is.
A lot of the reason why he's been going along with this shit was just to keep Kim around.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, I mean, he's been desperate to do that the whole series.
He really has, but especially this last scam with Howard. He was never really completely on board. We can tell just from his trying to talk her out of it early on, and then his facial expressions ever after.
Right.
He was not completely on board, and then this happens. And if she leaves, then I don't... She probably is his last piece of humanity at this point.
I think so. Tom says, while I love the tragedy of Howard's demise and I always anticipated that his death would somehow be Kim's punishment for their wickedness, I of course never imagined it would come at Lalo's hands. Though as perfect as that scene felt, in retrospect, it does strain credulity. Why would a guy who just camped out for four nights in a sewer not have the patience to wait in the shadows until this stranger he's heard ranting at Jim and Kimmy leaves? Jim and Kimmy. You wrote Jim and Kimmy. Damn you.
He was trying to trip you up.
Ah, being gaslit.
Yep.
Gaslighted? 15 minutes playing flip phone bejeweled in the car seemed worth the wait to avoid killing a rando. Yeah. I suppose.
But time is also of the essence. He doesn't know how quickly guys are going to be called back to various places, right? He's on a warpath at this point.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of this until just now. We know that some of Mike's guys were on Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Did he pull those too?
Seems like it. Or I say that. We don't know. Maybe there are witnesses to this. Exactly. Yeah.
We're still in this scene. Like, Mike's guys could be calling on the radio right now. Lalo's here.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
I doubt it, but
I do too.
I think this is one of the long shot targets he pulled people off of. Low priority.
Yeah.
But
I love the vagueness of him just saying he pulled off low priority targets. Great. So we don't even get to know.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Paul says, wow, what an ending. I thought that Howard and Hank might have some parallels. They both find out that their nemesis, or at least the source of evil that they had to deal with, i.e. Hank finding out about Walt being Heisenberg and Howard realizing Jimmy and Kim being behind everything, both had some kind of closure or triumph before they got shot. Hank arrested Walt, Howard confronted Kim and Jimmy and got somewhat of a confession. What do you think? Are there any more parallels between those characters, Howard and Hank? I wasn't seeing the Howard and Hank stuff. I was looking at it through the lens of Howard and Chuck.
Yeah.
And Jimmy, through the Jimmy lens, getting both of them sort of killed. But I suppose that there are some parallels there too with Hank.
Yeah, some parallels. There are some really good memes and posts that have come out of this episode. I was enjoying those thoroughly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. One of them.
Describe okay. memes to me. They will be twice as funny when described.
All right. I use a meme as a very loose term. They're not always funny. The thing that's really sticking out in my mind right now with this point in the conversation is there was fan art of Jimmy kind of like sitting with his head in his hands, and behind him are the photos of Chuck, the paintings of Chuck, and then there's another one of Howard, and there's blood splashed across both. Like, that is very poignant.
That was not funny.
It wasn't funny. I didn't mean for it to be.
Memes are supposed to be funny.
Not always.
Oh. Okay.
You have, I was going to say a toddler's understanding of memes, but I feel like a toddler would understand memes more at this point. You have.
Probably. Toddlers are on Twitter, right?
You have a 75-year-old's understanding of memes, sir. Sir.
Whatever. I remember Numa Numa.
Oh. Is that a meme?
Star Wars kid. I remember them all. All the good ones.
I remember those too, but only barely.
Yeah. All right. Reginald says, Mike tells Gus that Lalo's coming for him while Gus is surrounded by children. That reminded me of George W. How many letters are in the middle there? The young Bush.
W. Yeah. Being told is the dad.
Being told about the attacks on 9/11 while he was at an elementary school in Sarasota. It's weird that you bring this up, and that, yes, they did this in the episode, because I just started watching Veep. And season one, they do this exact same thing with Selena being told of something terrible that happens while she's sitting with a bunch of school kids. And so this was like in my head while you were describing it. And I'm like, wow, this is like burned into the American psyche, this image. Everybody who was alive at the time and can recollect it remembers this image.
Yeah, absolutely.
People were furious about it, but honestly, I don't blame the guy. Like, what do you do? What do you do? You're sitting there, you get the worst news of anybody's life.
Yeah.
And you're in front of a bunch of children. Do you want to freak them the fuck out? Or do you want to
play it cool?
Excuse yourself in a timely manner and get... Yeah. Yeah, I don't envy that position.
No, yeah, it's... Nobody, I don't think any of us really know what we would actually do in that position, right, unless we were in that position. And thank goodness most of us aren't.
Yeah.
Because that sounds hard. Sounds real hard. Life's already hard.
But it's definitely something that I think writers and directors have put into works.
Yeah.
Maybe even subconsciously in a lot of cases. I'm not sure that this was supposed to parallel that, but when you see it, it's like, oh, yeah, that's that image.
If for another reason than just high contrast. We love high contrast in media.
Dante writes in, says, maybe I'm on an island, but I think Gilligan, Gould, and gang, the G3, are losing their fastball when it comes to the storytelling and writing part of a show. In isolation, I liked the episode. The first half was very entertaining with Saul and the woman with a piece missing, trying to recreate the photos. And Patrick Fabian was great. But when I think about this episode in totality, in the context of the final season, and this being a mid-season finale, I don't think it holds up. After the revelation of the D-Day plan, was it really worth 3 to 4 episodes of setup? I still don't think they did a good enough job explaining why they did this to Howard. Stop there for a second. I think Howard nailed it. Howard, you know, just realizes that Kim has this streak to her that he never saw in her before, because she never showed it.
Right.
And intentionally, I think, repressed it. After that flashback we see with her mom,
yeah,
I think she was holding that stuff at bay. And when Jimmy kind of unlocked that part of her personality, it all just came flooding out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a dam. They've been holding back the water for so long. There's so much of it, and it just goes overboard, right?
You start to lose track of what is okay and what isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I know why they did it, but if they didn't work for you, I understand. Also, I liked his final monologue at the end, and I sided with him on Jimmy and Kim, but I wasn't heartbroken about his death because we didn't spend much time with him. We get almost obsessed level detail on Lalo living in a fucking sewer and taking truck stop showers, but we didn't get enough detail on Howard in order for his death to have the impact that they were going for. Wow, we got a scene of his wife pouring the coffee he made in a cup, and Also, why did Lalo even kill Howard? Oh, it was because of the mid-season finale and they needed a pseudo cliffhanger. Pseudo cliffhanger, shut your mouth. This is a hell of a cliffhanger. This is exactly how I like cliffhangers. We'll actually get to this in an email later. I think this is a great cliffhanger. Anyway,
well constructed.
I think they ran out of story. Lalo versus Gus and his goons has zero stakes. I don't freaking care. We know Lalo doesn't survive. Well, we think we know, yeah. And we know the fate of the Super Lab. Took me a long time to even come around to start watching this show and still don't get the people who say the show is better than Breaking Bad. After one of the best shows ever, Breaking Bad ended, and they announced Saul, I was against it because I felt it wasn't needed. I thought those early seasons of Slippin' Jimmy and Doc Review were tough to get through. However, I do think season 4 and season 5 were a big step up. To end on a somewhat positive note, I still think all the other aspects of the show, the acting, the writing, cinematography, directing, etc., are still very good, but to me, those are all icing on the story cake. I did want to read that because it is kind of, it's one of the few dissenting opinions I got on this finale specifically. I think you're probably not far off with the way a lot of people felt about those three episodes of setup.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to get through.
Including me. Maybe I'm guilty of being impatient. Maybe this just didn't feel like Better Call Saul because they haven't done this kind of stuff before. But I'm with you on that. I was not thrilled by the last three episodes. The last one was better. This one I think is very good. But yeah, I can understand if it's, you know, taking its toll on your enjoyment.
For sure.
All right, Dave from Melbourne. Excuse me, Melbourne.
There you go. Yeah, I like it.
Jesus. I cannot believe that episode from Lalo doing his best Pennywise impression to the Howard con, the candle letting us know that something isn't right, and of course, the murder of Howard. It was such an incredible episode, but I have to say, I really felt uncomfortable watching Jimmy run to hand the photos off, knowing that Bob Odenkirk has had a heart attack during the making of the season. I don't think it was during this episode, but it was still a little unnerving. I'm with you. Like, I shouldn't be thinking about this. I didn't want to be thinking about this while watching the episode.
Because he's fine.
He's fine now. He's fine now. But yeah, I was thinking, like, is this the thing? Was this the problem?
Oh, is that really in the back of everybody else's heads? Like, oh, what was the episode? What was the trigger?
It's not. It's not in my head until I see him doing something physically strenuous like this. And then I go, oh no, this man just had a heart attack. Don't make him run. Or like this. Yeah, is this the scene that did it? Why can't I just watch TV and enjoy it without having to feel bad for people?
It's that pesky humanity of yours.
Ugh. Blech. Don't need it. Barf. Get rid of it. He says it's also kind of fitting that all the efforts that Kim and Jimmy had gone to destroy Howard ended up doing that, just not in the way that they had planned.
Yeah.
Howard shouldn't have gone out this way, but what a moment. I'm now worried for Kim, but also know the introduction of the Disappearer business card last episode. I do really hope she gets away and we end the series with Gene and Kim meeting back up again. Yeah, I think that becomes more interesting now, right? Like with the threat of violence, not just a threat anymore, but or not just an implied threat, but like an explicit threat.
Mm-hmm.
I could see her disappearing.
I mean, it's come to the point now where she is a known entity. And I think if she does want out of this completely, yeah, she probably will have to disappear or die.
Yeah.
Or be safe in jail.
Or Lalo could be killed.
Yeah. I don't know.
Hector doesn't know who she is. I don't.
It's true.
I mean, Mike does, but Mike and Gus have no use for her. Once the Lalo threat is dealt with, I think it'd be fine. So she's got a couple ways out, but I do think it's looking more likely that if she survives, she's going to have to get out of this life and, you know, take Jimmy's heart with it, like you said.
Yeah.
Dave from North Carolina. Everyone will remember this episode for its shocking final scene, and rightfully so. However, I'm conflicted about the first 40 minutes watching the Howard scheme play out. The show had been building toward the scam all season, but it played out exactly how everyone thought it would. The reshoots, the drugs on the pictures, the PI working for Saul, Howard confronting the judge, botching the case, and humiliating himself. It was all extremely predictable. It reminded me of the Westworld season 1 reveal about Ed Harris and Jimmy Simpson's characters. Everyone paying attention already knew what was going to happen. At first, this annoyed me, but after second watch, I'm thinking maybe that's what Gould and Gilligan wanted. Like they were trying to lull the viewer into thinking what that we had it all figured out, just so Howard's death would catch us even more off guard. If that's true, it's pretty freaking brilliant. I would say it did work.
It did work. It worked for me too. Yeah, absolutely.
Like I described, I thought this was going to be a Lalo scene. Now it's a Howard scene. Oops, nope. It's still a Lalo scene, and now Howard's dead. It was like all that stuff worked, and then like I said, the second layer of switching these photos on him in the scene where he makes a fool of himself. It was that extra little bit that I didn't see coming that no one predicted.
Yeah. It would have, it would have been, I kind of see what this person's saying. It might have been nice if there were maybe a couple more of those little things that we didn't see coming, but it does work very effectively as a way to lull us into thinking that we're so smart. We're so smart. We got it all figured out. We know exactly what's going to happen to everybody.
And the show has been smarter about how it's done this stuff, too. I think, like, season five, the stuff, all that stuff, it was hard to tell what Jimmy was doing, even though, like I said, they were playing with their cards face up, right? You can see him interviewing a bunch of people on a green screen. You can see him looking at the logos of Mesa Verde. All the pieces are there. It's just there's no way to really connect them. You don't have enough the context.
Yeah.
This, they played a little fast and loose with that, I thought.
Yeah, it is interesting also. It feels a little bit, so we've had like 3 hours of television, 4 hours leading up to this one, you know, 30 to 40 minute chunk. And you do have to ask yourself, was all of it worth it?
Yeah. No, totally.
Yes,
I agree.
I think yes and no is the right answer here.
Yeah. And like I said, I think it'll play better once you binge it.
Definitely.
Don't have to wait 4 weeks to see the conclusion of it.
You don't have to watch two setup episodes. You don't have to watch one setup episode twice, and then another setup episode twice, and then another setup episode twice.
Yeah, like we did for a podcast.
That's rough. So yeah, when you're not doing that, when you're just watching it like a TV show, yeah, it might feel better. And again, that's a lot of people said that about the last season of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Same shit. So
that's the thing. I think this episode was a very, very good episode. I don't think this has been the best season of Better Call Saul so far.
That's my general feeling too. Yeah, there are some standout moments, but as far as actual episodes go, I'm with you.
Let's move on to Brian, who had a few questions. I had to cut this first one because we proved it. Yes, spinning a can of soda, even slowly, you don't have to spin it like a fucking top.
Nope.
We'll make it safe to open. Question number two, why does Howard park his car outside on his driveway instead of in his four-car garage? Other more expensive cars, I assume? Yeah, he's got a Jaguar, but maybe that's his beater.
Yeah, that's his shitty Jaguar.
His daily driver.
Right? Yeah.
Why does Kim need to come back on D-Day? So this might be interesting. All she does is wrap an arm and temporarily drop some footwear. Five people are already involved to take a couple pictures. I think adding another person is more likely to slow it down than speed it up. My only thing is she saved a little bit of time by picking up supplies on her way.
That's true. She was the one who picked up all the crap for the fake cast.
And Jimmy didn't have time to do it. He was out recruiting his team. I don't see that anyone else really has the time because they everything is pretty much like a assembly line here, and it needs to go off the way it went off. Otherwise, they don't have enough time to do it.
Yeah, this all happens in the span of the same morning from when Jimmy sees dude picking up the liquor to assembling the crew. It's all the same.
Yeah, it's a few hours.
Yeah, same few hour span.
All right, Craig says, I wanted to add my thoughts on the subject of setup episodes, and sometimes, especially during last season, viewers can get impatient. Often people forget these thoughts and they fade in time and you are left with the good memories. I do remember that Breaking Bad had a lot of slow episodes, but we all remember The Hole as an amazing show. What they did here was show you that, yes, the scam went well, and like a good magician, your eyes were all on that and not on the actual consequences of their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And some consequences they were, indeed. Doug L., our resident legal expert here, not giving legal advice, but telling us how it is from the law's perspective. Doug L. says, so the ham scam mostly played out the way everyone seemed to think it would. Howard be embarrassed, and this would lead to a settlement in the Sampire case. In typical Villagang fashion, the dramatic value is less about the what, since the audience was ahead of the game, and more about the impact, the effect on the characters.
Yeah.
That said, I did want to point out some issues with the ham scam mechanics from a legal perspective. The scam somewhat overvalues the role of a mediator, which, by which I mean a biased mediator can only do so much damage. It's obviously not ideal, but there's no reason to react the way Howard did. Sometimes a mediator will start with a joint session, like the one in this week's episode, but eventually the two camps will be put into separate rooms. The mediator acts as a go-between, encouraging them to make settlement proposals, and using ostensibly impartial analysis of the case to persuade the parties to inch closer to an acceptable compromise. But the parties themselves are in control of what is proposed or accepted. No matter how biased the mediator, he or she could not persuade me or my client to make a move we didn't agree with. What an untrustworthy mediator could do is take something you tell the mediator in confidence and reveal it to the opponent, something they are forbidden from doing. If I suspected a mediator was biased, I could choose to end the mediation or be very careful about what I said, but there would be no reason to publicly accuse the mediator of bias in front of both sides.
Let me ask you something,
especially
Doug.
Especially right out of the gate.
Let me ask you something, Doug. Have you ever had too much coffee?
Yeah, you gotta remember Howard is on drugs at
He's a little bit on drugs. I don't know about you. I get very angry and very fast when I'm tweaking.
Doug says that actually at the end of this paragraph. Perhaps his impulsiveness could be attributed to whatever Jimmy dosed him with.
Yeah.
But absent that, I don't know many attorneys that would have reacted the way Howard did. So what about the outcome? If the parties did have concerns about the mediator, they could find a new one and probably reschedule for another date a month or two down the line. If the clients had concerns about Howard, they could put a new attorney on it, and the settlement value doesn't change, as that's driven by the case facts far more than the individual attorneys. That means this was really entertaining to watch, but I maintain this was a lot of risk for Jimmy and Kim without a guarantee this scheme would work, especially when they could just wait for the case to resolve on its own.
Mm-hmm.
That you are correct about. This is not necessarily about ending this case. This is more about getting Howard because it's fun.
Getting Howard because it's fun. Yeah.
They think he deserves it for some reason.
Yeah. When he said you get off on this, I mean, he wasn't wrong. They were literally going at it like rabbits.
Yeah.
Like the second the conference was over. Yeah.
They were still on the call. Erin could probably hear him. Good. She deserves it.
I think they were muted. I believe cell phone technology was such that the mute button existed, but.
Probably. All right, Tyler P. says, with this ending being one of the most shocking final scenes I have ever seen, I was still left with the question of why would Lalo go to Kim and Jimmy? Maybe I'm late to the party, but it dawned on me that it's the same thing Lalo was searching for in Germany, proof against Gus. I think Lalo's plan was to go to the apartment to get the information out of Jimmy that he failed to obtain last season in Bad Choice Road.
Mm-hmm.
I also think he was planning on killing Kim to show Jimmy he isn't fucking around, but Howard being there allowed him to get the same results. Rest in peace, Howard. You didn't deserve any of this. You could be right about that. You could be right. He might have inadvertently saved Kim.
Yeah.
If we find out that was true the next episode, that's going to be pretty devastating. Like, even more devastating than Howard gave his life for the person who's been trying to ruin his.
Yes, absolutely. Bitter.
This is the thing I was talking about when I did the preview cast and I was saying I want to see something beyond the pale.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily need to see Howard die, but Howard dying is beyond the pale.
Like, it is beyond the pale.
I'm very angry at both of them because I don't think Howard deserved it.
Yeah.
I think Howard is a better human being than either of these people. He's certainly shown more potential for growth, to positive growth.
Right.
Because Kim has definitely changed a lot, but not for the positive.
It's true. He was trying. He is all of us at our best moments when we're just trying. We're just trying to do the best that we can with the knowledge that we have and trying to move forward while also like acknowledging any past harms that we've done. Yeah, no, he was all right. He was an all right dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also very angry at him.
Yeah. So I don't know if they deserve to die for this. Maybe.
I'm 2% less worried for Kim. I'm still very worried for her, but I'm 2% less worried.
Okay.
Because I'm also mad at her.
Yeah. All right. Anthony in Sacramento says, years back, not sure which pod, but probably The Walking Dead. This is a cliffhanger one. Said something about, A.A. Brown said something about cliffhangers that stuck with me. He said, one of the best examples was Best of Both Worlds from The Next Generation. The reveal of Picard as Locutus was the shock, but the cliffhanger was the reaction. What does Riker do? How does the crew react? The Mr. Worf fire line was perfect, since it shifted the tension from the shocking reveal to the reaction, which is what a cliffhanger should be. Like a great book, when the chapter ends, you should be so hungry for the next scene that you can't help yourself from turning the page. You have to force yourself to put it down and breathe. I feel the same way about the Better Call Saul mid-season finale. 5 more minutes is all I want. The reveal of Lalo in the apartment was the shock. They could have left it there, and lesser shows would have. But the Vila gang and killed Howard, and now Jimmy and Kim must react. Like Riker, the shock and despair is secondary. The reaction to this moment is the real cliffhanger. Yes, I've always said,
mm-hmm.
I don't want the cliffhanger to be what happens. I want it to be what happens next.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
How do these characters react to the thing that happened?
Mm-hmm.
And the worst possible example of this that I have ever seen on television is in The Walking Dead, which is a piece of shit show and you shouldn't watch it. It's Negan killing someone with Lucille. It's his bat. He kills someone. We don't know who.
Wow.
Right?
Really?
They leave that as a cliffhanger to the next season. He swings the bat. He smashes someone.
Weak.
They fall over, but we're seeing it from their POV, so we have no idea who it is. Probably the worst cliffhanger I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's awful. Forget
yeah.
that.
Because what is there to talk about there?
Nothing. Just
you
who,
talk about,
who is it? Who is it?
I don't know. What facts do we have to go on? None. He swung a bat.
They are very susceptible to bat damage.
Right.
They're weak to bat damage.
As any human would be, yeah. A negative 10 to bat damage. Right. That's the thing, right? There's nothing to talk about there. Here,
yeah.
There's everything to talk about.
Yes.
What does
Where
Lalo
do
next? How do Jimmy and Kim react? Is this going to be the thing that drives Kim out of
Is this a splinter?
Jimmy's life? Like,
right.
There are so many things to talk about here and such a rich conversation to have.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they had, you know, had him screw the gun on and then the episode just ended, or like he walks in and the episode ends, you don't have anything to talk about.
Or
it's like,
even
what is he going to do?
That, or even worse, you see the second flicker of the candle flame and then black.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That sure. feels like...
And then it's
that
Aaron walking in and says, oh, Mr. HHM, I forgot to tell you.
Here's your shaken soda.
Yeah. Anyway, I agree with you. Couldn't agree more on cliffhangers. Dan in Mogador? Mogador? Mogador. Gotta be Mogador. Somewhere in the UK, I think. A couple of quick things. You said last week that nothing Better Call Saul does could negatively impact your feelings about Breaking Bad. What if at the end of Better Call Saul, we see Jimmy falling into a coma and it's revealed that all the events of Breaking Bad are nothing more than Jimmy's coma-induced dream?
Well, all right. Okay. Fine.
Yeah. It still wouldn't change Breaking Bad.
No.
I could just ignore it like I do the prequels of Star Wars. On a more serious note, I enjoyed the last 7 episodes, but it felt like there was something missing for the majority of the run. I realized that it was in the final moments of episode 7. The scene with Jimmy, Kim, Howard, and Lalo is pretty much the first scene in the entire run where we've known exactly what was happening and exactly what the stakes were. I honestly felt like I was seeing all these characters for the first time in this season, because every other scene they've been in, we haven't been fully aware of their motivations, plans, or even exactly what is happening. I think they played too much of a fake game across these 7 episodes, and it was really highlighted when we finally arrived at a scene where we were all in it together. I think that's a really good way of putting it. Because we haven't had an opportunity to talk about a scene in this this amount of depth before, because every scene has been like, well, what are they doing? You know, like, why are they doing this? But when Lalo walks in, when you see that second flame, you know exactly, like he said, what the stakes are.
Yeah.
You know what the danger is here. You know how this could go. And if it goes that way, it's very bad for everyone. You get so much from just a single shot. The rest of the season is missing that. And I feel like Better Call Saul has been very good at that throughout most of its run.
Yeah.
Is just letting me get into the story and realize that when something happens, it has these implications.
Right.
This season has been a lot different, in my opinion.
Yeah, there are a lot fewer of these pure emotional moments, these like primal moments, basically. In this moment, when we are in this room with these four people, we're terrified. That's a very basic emotion.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you guys are saying earlier in the season, it's much more about humans and the way that we trick each other, right?
Yeah.
All the confidence games that we play with each other. It's not
more
so
cerebral
much.
Too. It's
exactly.
Less like you don't feel it in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of think about it in your head. You're like, okay, what are all the moving parts here?
Yes.
And it takes, you're analyzing it more than you're feeling it.
Exactly.
And I feel like when they really get to a scene that you can just feel and you don't have to think about it because you already know, you've already processed the scenario enough in the previous scenes to understand why the thing you just saw is super important.
Yeah.
That's when it's at its best. And this is an example of that.
I agree with that sentiment.
All right, let's get to the final email here from Norm. Says, I won't claim any internet points on calling Mr. H.O. Ward's death, especially as I can see the future and his death will be ruled a suicide or his body will disappear forever, which will have pretty much the same effect on his reputation going forward. How sad is that? He had it right. He rode Kim and Jimmy pretty hard, but nothing that deserved the humiliation of D-Day, let alone getting his brains blown out. And while it was an amazing scene, who didn't think Lalo was coming at the first knock at the door? Yes. You and I both did. But I still don't think anything in Better Call Saul has told me Kim would push this far. But it shows how fantastic this team is to pull off something I do not believe is viable. Kudos to them and RIP to Mr. Ward. Yeah, it's a good way to go out. I did really enjoy this episode. Looking forward to the second half to see how the chickens come home to roost here.
6 weeks. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Thank God it's only 6 weeks.
6 weeks, and then we get another 6 weeks of episodes, and then the rest of your life.
Why was that so ominous? What do you know?
I'm pretty sure they won't do any more stories in the Breaking Bad universe, if I had to guess.
No Gus spinoffs.
At least not the Villa Gang crew that we're familiar with. They're probably ready to be done with that, right? After like 15 years doing Breaking Bad universe shows.
They might be. Oh,
speaking. Maybe there'd be a movie or something again.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could see there being some kind of movie or something. By the way, Gus, speaking of Gus, Chris McCaleb cleared up on the Insider podcast this week that Giancarlo told him to pronounce his last name that way. So he could be fucking with all of us.
How was it? Esposito?
Esposito.
Esposito?
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. I found out people were writing in like crazy this week to discuss that.
Yeah.
I cut it for time, but like apparently he's Italian. Is that right?
Don't look at me, man. I have no idea.
Yeah, apparently his full name is Giancarlo Giuseppe Alessandro Esposito.
Well, shit. Just kind of all of it in there.
Yeah, he's the son of Giovanni C. Esposito.
All right.
An Italian stagehand and carpenter from Naples. So at least, Esposito. On his dad's side, he's definitely Italian.
Esposito. Goddamn.
Not Esposito. Would have
sunk it. I Esposito.
Esposito, that's not his name. But he is Italian. That's wild to me. Okay. At least half Italian. His mom's African American, so that's where he gets his pigmentation, I assume.
His melanin.
Yeah, but wild. I wouldn't have guessed it. Well, Esposito doesn't sound like an Italian name to me, but I guess it is. Giancarlo. And certainly Giuseppe.
Yeah, no, Giuseppe. I mean, you can't. It's all right there. You can't deny that one.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, people wrote in about that. Good to know it was just him fucking with a producer.
Possibly.
An editor. But that's it. That's our coverage for the first half of season 6. The final season.
The final season.
The rest of your life. Oh. we'll be back.
The rest of your life.
There in you. 6 weeks. To talk about the second half of the final season.
Yeah.
If you want to send in any feedback between now and then, feel free to. You can do so at bcs@baldmove.com. Gather that up. Maybe talk about it a little bit on the first episode.
Yeah. Tell us we're dummies.
That's it. That's it. It's been a long road getting from there to here, but we're here.
Now we're at the rest stop. We're at the travel center.
And we get to see how it all plays out.
And we get to take a shower.
But only for an hour.
God, that's so long for a shower. Are you kidding me?
But not for a shower.
Don't raise your eyebrows at me, sir.
A shower.
Duh. Kitty, cover your eyes.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Till then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis. Bye.